back to it on a Friday. The Democrats will conclude, I guess, today another 8 hours of their case in front of the United States Senate. It goes on forever and ever. I feel sorry for the senators there that are, you know, in those chairs, no cell phones, but they get up and leave, it seems, and they're making some accommodations. But let's be honest, it's not a fun place to sit 8 hours a day for 3 days in a row. And then, of course, the Trump defense team comes up tomorrow. Joining me is Dr. Adam Carrington, now the assistant professor of politics at Hillsdale College. Doctor, welcome back.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. All right, so let's start with, what do you make of it so far? How close of attention have you paid? I mean, it's difficult. I watch for as long as I can until my head hits the desk. You know, I do my best, but man, it gets boring.
Yeah, I don't see why, except for there was the Clinton precedent, why it needs to go on this long. Why you need 24 hours? And I think we'll think the same thing really with the other side too. Why you need 24 hours to make the case when I think I've seen it made in about 30 minutes, maybe about as well as either side could. That said, yes, I've been trying to pay about as good of attention as I can, and trying to find. Of course, we're going to have to weigh the facts, and the American people, I think, have already, in many ways, already done that. I'm also teaching the presidency right now, which is kind of perfect. And, you know, trying to see what this might mean long term for the relationship between Congress and the presidency as a way of trying to pull out more than just what I think is getting to be a little bit of ridiculously repetitive argumentation.
Well, it is repeat, retread. Repetitive is a good word. You're right. It just goes, they every 30, 40 minutes or so, they come back over the same points. And what was astounding, we played a clip here earlier, a little compilation of Adam Schiff, Russia, Russia, Putin, Russia, Russia. I mean, I thought we got past that on page two of the Mueller report, of it being about Russia. And if it was about that, shouldn't that be in the impeachment? And if it was about quid pro quo, shouldn't that be in the impeachment? None of those things are there, which I think is problematic for the Democrats. Plus, when they accused Republicans that don't vote for more witnesses and more information and more tonnage of stuff to come into the trial, accusing those people of a cover-up, irritated and offended Lisa Murkowski, among others, and she's one of the key people they're trying to get to. I don't think it's going particularly well for them. Your thoughts?
Right. I think a couple of the missteps that they've made, and I think you've hit several of them, is you want to make the jury as on your side as possible, and accusing them up front of being in the bag for the other side isn't a good idea. Yeah, I think the other thing is also that I think they needed to have a tighter focus on what they're actually accusing the president of. I think also what you were saying about documents is this rush to get the impeachment articles passed and sent over and then asking for more documents rather than trying to fight out and get those documents, get those witnesses beforehand, coupled with Nancy Pelosi sitting on them for a month, all sort of says, well, it's a national emergency and it's not. And, you know, and I think Republicans have certainly not been completely consistent on certain things. That's politics. But I think those have been the things that have really made it harder for them to make their case.
Well, the idea that somehow he's a
good faith. Yeah.
The notion that somehow the president is an existential threat to the Republic in our future and we're all going to perish if not this impeachment. Obviously, that was blown out the window because as soon as they passed the articles, hey, it's Christmas break. Let's go home for the, you know, holidays. See you in January, you know, and they all run out of here. And then when they demand to hear from people like Mulvaney and Bolton, whom they didn't even subpoena, they didn't even issue subpoenas for these people. Now they're demanding that the United States Senate does it. And if they don't, it's a cover up. That's part of the hypocrisy and the inconsistencies that I think are going to be very problematic, because I don't think you get Lisa Murkowski across the aisle necessarily. Susan Collins has shown some rigidity to moving right straight to witnesses and documents, that she's open to it, but you've got to make your case. And right now, from where I sit, it's an uphill battle, because you're right, it's a bunch of repetition and the same arguments, and it comes back to Russia. I don't know what happens. So what happens starting tomorrow? The Trump team comes up. They might do themselves well to spend 2 hours, make their case, and say, we're done. See ya.
I would actually think it would be a pretty bold move. And in fact, you know, there's a defense tactic at times in real trials where they will call no witnesses and basically rest and go to closing arguments. And sometimes that's a play to say the other side's case was so weak, we don't feel like we have to defend. Now, I don't think they should go that far. That's disrespectful in this case. But making a much shorter defense, I think, could be a bold move in saying that's why they did it.
Now, the problem being is, if they make their defense and it is on a Saturday, if they were to conclude on a Saturday, who would actually see it? Because you know that the major news networks would do them no favors as far as coverage of what their defense comments are. And the defense is many. The defense is easy. I mean, obstruction of Congress, the way they've laid it out, could be misconstrued to say if the president vetoes a bill sent by the House to the Senate and it's approved there, and the president vetoes it, well, that's obstruction of Congress. He didn't do what we told him to do, based on how loose this is. Do you see my point?
Absolutely, and this is why I wish some of these issues would get worked out more, because in some ways you have two extremes. The president doesn't want to give anything to Congress as it tries to investigate, and Congress wants everything, whether it hurts national security or not. And to be honest, it probably should be somewhere in between. Congress has a right to investigate.
And that's where the courts come in.
But we're not getting it worked out because of the way these sides are conducting themselves, especially the managers.
Well, and that's where the courts would come in. Dr. Adam Carrington here, assistant professor of politics, Hillsdale College, on the conversation this hour. But wouldn't that be exactly what the president did when they demanded this? Then he said, we'll take it to court. Well, that's obstruction of Congress. No, it's not. That's a legal dispute. That's a legal argument to be had before a judge. Now, if they went before the judge and the judge said, you have to give those documents and that person has to testify, and the administration continued to say no, that would be obstruction of Congress. That would be something you could impeach on potentially. But just having a legal dispute, an argument in the courts, which, by the way, from what I remember in fifth grade, is a co-equal branch of government, isn't that the way the railroad is supposed to run?
This is where it is a little bit murky, because this is a legal proceeding, but it was intentionally given to Congress, not to the courts. And it is interesting. The Department of Justice actually said it shouldn't go to the courts, where Trump's lawyers have said that it should. And this is a question, and it's thankfully a hard one, because we've hardly ever had impeachments. Should the courts get involved in impeachments or not? And that's one of the things I wish we could litigate actually a little bit more to get cleared up, because how much do we want the courts involved in this when the Constitution actually said the other branch, you know, the Congress should be the one doing it?
Well, I'm okay with it. I mean, honestly, yeah. I believe there are three co-equal branches of government. I think if there's a call for an instant replay and you need a referee on the play, that's where the courts come in. They don't necessarily have to, you know, go much beyond that, but say, yes, we agree with that. No, and, you know, that's the function of the court. Doctor, we have to leave it there. Of course, we'll be watching to the best of our ability without bashing our heads on the desk. But we'll talk about this again soon. Dr. Adam Carrington, I always appreciate you being here.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Still coming on the program today, Congressman Jim Jordan will be here today. Jim Jordan will join us. So will Hogan Gidley from the White House. It's the Steve Gruber Show. Let's talk a little bit about casinos. You go to a casino and place all your poker chips on a single hand. Well, guess what? You probably just lost everything in one swift move. Now, what if I wasn't talking about losing at the casino? What if I was talking about the stock market and those colored chips that you just bet? That's your retirement and your legacy. Are you prepared to lose your hard-earned assets to market volatility, potential rising taxes, inflation, or unforeseen expenses? Hi, this is Steve Gruber. And if you're in your 50s or 60s like I am, stop gambling on your retirement in the stock market. There are alternatives to grow your nest egg that offer a principal guarantee and optional income for the rest of your life. Call Bruce Van Hall and Mike Douglas of Life Plan Financial to learn more. Call 517-323-7526 or go online at MyLifePlanFinancial.com. That's MyLifePlanFinancial.com.
Life Plan Financial Design, Inc. is a financial services firm that offers a broad array of products and services, including insurance and annuities. Licensed in Michigan.
Student safety affects us all, and you can make a difference using OK to Say.
Did you know that in 81% of violent incidents in U.S. schools, at least one other person had information that a school attack was planned but failed to report it?
How many lives could have been saved if just one person had said something?
Okay to Say can change that. Okay to Say is an easy and confidential way for Michigan students to report anything that threatens their safety or the safety of others.
If you see or hear something that doesn't seem right, you can submit a confidential tip using the Okay to Say mobile app.
Or you can submit by text, email, the Okay to Say website, or call 8555-OK-TO-SAY.
The tip information is confidential, so you never have to worry about retaliation, rejection, or being labeled a snitch. It's that easy.
You might be the one person who helps to prevent a tragedy.
Take a stand and protect yourself and others by using OK to Say. Because if you won't, who will?
This message sponsored by OK to Say and MAB.